Hi, this is Sybil. This panel was difficult to record because of the topic. In Mormon culture and in Mormon doctrine, it seems that women are primarily told to be mothers and to bear children. And so those who choose not to are left in a very strange space inside Mormonism. And it's very difficult for us to find a way to frame a discussion and to find ways to talk about why we've chosen not to have children, our fears about motherhood, and our experiences in a church that sees our worth in relation to whether we have children. As we recorded this panel, we found ourselves becoming increasingly nervous that we would be offending simply by trying to express our own experiences. So please know that this is not our intention. We did not set out to try to offend anyone. We were simply trying to express our own experience. And we're sure that there are others out there who also share this experience, and we would like them to feel that they are not alone. So please, as you listen to this panel, go in with an open mind and try to hear us for what we're saying. Instead of feeling that we are somehow judging those who have children or being insensitive to those who are infertile and cannot have children, or whatever the case may be, we are not speaking to those experiences. We are speaking to our experience of choosing to be childless. So without further ado, let's go listen to us talk about being childless by choice, a topic which is not very often dealt with in Mormonism. Welcome to another episode of Daughters of Mormonism. I'm your host, Sybil. Today we're having a panel discussion about being childless by choice, which is an unusual thing to hear in Mormon culture. On our panel today, we've got two guests, Amy.
Hello.
And Shelby.
Hello.
Hi, thanks so much for being here. I was thinking, as we get started, how about if we start off with kind of little thumbnails of kind of where we're at, like how old we were when we got married and what our initial plans were and kind of where we're at now, so we can just kind of see what we represent here. So for me, I didn't get married until I was in my late 20s. I took my time. I suppose outside of Mormon culture, I probably got married still considered in a young bracket, but in Mormon culture, I was an old maid, I guess. And when I got married, I didn't have any plans to have children. And now I'm in my 30s, my mid-30s, and I still don't have plans to have children. But I definitely have had a lot of pressure, and we'll talk about that as we go. So that's kind of where I'm at. How about you, Shelby?
Well, I got married, I got engaged when I was 18, and I did not want to get married that young, but I prayed about it and felt like I should get married. So I knew that I should get married, but I did not feel like having children right off the bat was a good plan for me. But I did, you know, kind of think that, you know, maybe in the next, you know, few years, 1 or 2 years, that would be a good plan. But then as I, you know, got into marriage and started to get into college, I realized that that was not right and have been pushing it back. And I too have received pressure. And now it's a kind of question mark whether or not we'll have kids or when.
How about you, Amy?
I got married when I was 21, and I also felt that that was really young, and I did a lot of freaking out when I was engaged, but got married anyway. And I don't remember ever even really talking about having children before we got married. So we didn't have any plans immediately. We both had some school to finish. We were both still college students, and we both knew that we wanted to go to graduate school. So we knew that if we were going to have kids, it would be in the distant future. Didn't think about it very much, and so we've now been married 10 years. He's done with graduate school now, and I'm finishing up. So we're sort of at a point now where we think we could, you know, financially be able to have kids and also have the time to have kids. Graduate school hours were really long, so it wouldn't have been possible, I think, before. But we're still kind of ambivalent about it.
Okay, so what kinds of messages have we received all growing up and during, especially during young women years, and then no doubt, once we got married. What kind of messages did we receive?
The message I got was that having children wasn't really optional, which is still a message I get sometimes from my mom. But, you know, it seemed like a lot of sort of my value as a person was tied up in this, you know, having children, being a mom, getting married and all of that. I had a lot of trouble with sort of messages about, at least I saw them as mixed messages about these lessons about developing your talents and then also these messages about this is what you have to do. And I didn't feel like any of my talents were really easily applicable to sort of motherhood. I really, really wanted to do some academic stuff. And so I was having a hard time balancing those.
You know, I actually remember in Young Women's, and this is kind of silly, but I remember that we were very much aware of the women in the ward who did not have children. And we all kind of felt sorry for them as young women and would talk and say, oh, sister so-and-so, she doesn't have kids. We should, you know, give her a card for Mother's Day, or I wonder what that's about, and kind of talk about it. And it felt natural. But now that I'm in that position, I feel a little bit ashamed of that. But it just felt so natural as a young woman, because that was the messages that I got, is that, you know, every woman wants to be a mother. And if they're not a mother, then it's a tragedy. It's sad. Sadness is there. And I don't know if that's true. I never talked to them about it. I don't know what their motivations were or what the issue was, but that was kind of the assumption and that I got as a young woman. And I remember when they changed the young women theme to be strengthening home and families, and just those sorts of things I remembered, and I didn't really like them, but I was such a true believer that I accepted them and kind of got on board with it.
Yeah. I got a lot of those similar messages. Amy, when you said that motherhood was not optional, like having children was not an optional thing, that there weren't other options, that was definitely a really strong message that I got.
And good. I thought that was just me.
No, I definitely got that as well. And that whenever anyone was talking about my future to me, they were always talking about when you're married and have children, then, you know, they would fill in with whatever we were actually talking about. But it was always, you know, this is your destiny. You know, thou shalt not shirk thy destiny. Thou shalt go forward and multiply and replenish this earth with, anyway, you know, like it, and
Absolutely.
And it was presented very much as, you know, build the kingdom of God. And this is the divine glory of being a woman. And I always felt kind of shifty and guilty because I wasn't real excited about that. That didn't feel like what I wanted to do with my life. I think especially since I was the oldest daughter of a very large Mormon family. And so I spent a lot of my time, very much of my time, raising my younger brothers and sisters, I thought, well, do I want to do this forever? And I didn't. And so I remember in Young Women's feeling often very, very shifty. Like I didn't want anyone to figure me out, because then they would know that I was a terrible, terrible person, because I wasn't yearning after this great glory of being a woman and having children.
Right. Yeah, I think I felt a lot of guilt as a teenager for the same reasons.
I actually had mixed feelings. There were times when I really accepted that role and was excited about it. And I remember my math teacher in middle school asking me what I wanted to do for my career and saying, I just want to be a mom. And him kind of being like, well, I think you should think about it. You're a really smart girl, and that sort of thing. And getting these mixed messages, and then realizing that I really did want to go to college, and the anxiety that I felt about going to college, but also really having a testimony and being that I was, that I believed so much, being excited about that in some ways too. But I never really liked babies, but I just felt really kind of mixed up about it. Also being excited, but also being like, I don't really know if this is what I want to do. And I don't really appreciate the message that you have to do it, because I think that there are times and seasons for things, and that would have been a healthier message, because you can be excited about it, but when you're ready, not ready or not, here comes baby sort of thing.
So, Shelby, you were saying at one point about there being these women in your ward who didn't have children, and so, on Mother's Day, then you would give them cards or whatever. And I don't know, like it's making me remember when I was just barely newly married. I think I'd been married a year or something, and we were in this ward that had. It was a young married student ward, and it had just, tons and tons and tons of married couples and all these babies and little toddlers, and I think it had like five nurseries, and anyway, it was just full of little children, and I didn't have any children, nor was I pregnant. And I remember at one point when I was talking with a couple of the Relief Society ladies who tended to ignore everything I said. I felt like it was because I didn't have children.
Actually now, but go on.
Anyway, and at one point they were comparing pregnancy notes and they were talking about morning sickness and things like that. And at one point I said something in the conversation, and I don't even remember what it was that I said, but for some reason it gave them both the impression that I was infertile. And they actually, the word that they used was the biblical, you're barren kind of an idea. And they were instantly so sympathetic and saying, oh, God will make this right for you later, and don't worry, and you'll have your chance, and all this stuff. And I didn't know what to say. And I think that probably some of our listeners who are listening to this podcast are thinking, why would you be childless by choice? I want children and I can't have children. And it's like, well, yes. And this actually is part of the pressure, I think, is that, well, what if, if you have fully functioning anatomy and a womb and viable eggs and so forth, shouldn't you be having children because other people can't? Okay, personally, I think that's a horrible reason to have children because you can.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, you having children doesn't help anyone else. Unless you give them up, I guess. But
That's a really good
my
point,
having
Amy.
babies doesn't make it any better for women who are struggling to have them.
That is a really, really that's perfect. Yes. Unless I were to have a baby and give it to them, but
Right, yeah.
so what about both of you when you were young marrieds? What kinds of questions and pressures did you receive?
I felt like I got pressure from surprising places. I expected to get a lot of it with my mom's side of the family, which is very religious. But I ended up getting a lot of it from my dad's side of the family, and that sort of surprised me. But yeah, I had a lot of aunts and uncles mostly who would ask me like every time I came home when I was gonna have a baby, and I was like, I'm in college, right? Once I got out of college, which would have been about 3 years after I got married, I guess, there was a little more pressure. But once I started graduate school, I think most people backed off. I did have like a couple of experiences before I got married when I was still in church when people would ask me, even before I got married, if we planned on having babies right away. And I remember one time there was a man who had just moved into the ward, and I hadn't even really met him yet. And he was kind of a weird guy, but he came up and asked me when we were going to have kids, and I thought that was the strangest thing because I'd, never even met him. And I was like, well, we're going to go to school for a while. And I don't remember exactly what he said, but I remember sort of feeling scolded after whatever it was he said. But I definitely got admonished that I shouldn't put it off.
For me, since I got engaged so young, I hadn't really started my life at all at that point. I was fresh out of high school when I got engaged, and I was dumb enough to answer those questions because I thought I knew, but I didn't know anything, as being, a 19-year-old, and it didn't really bother me that much until it started to get offensive and it started to question my righteousness. And I remember going out to visit family member or my husband's side of the family, after my wedding, and I really hadn't met a lot of the family members before just the wedding day. I had met them on my wedding day, and then this was my second time meeting them. When are you gonna have kids? Came up in a car ride with a few of my in-laws, and they got very offensive, and it was kind of like, well, women are baby makers. And I'm like, are you? I'm like, that's really offensive. And he was, and at first it was kind of like he was joking, but then he took a very serious tone and was like, well, aren't we all baby makers? Isn't that the plan of God, is to make babies? And if you're not making babies, then you're an idolater. And kind of accused me of being an idolater. And this kind of went on, this conversation, and I just burst into tears. Newlywed, my first, in time with, spending a holiday with my in-laws, and was being accused of being an idolater for putting myself first and not having babies right at the tender age of 19. So that was a very hard experience. And he apologized afterwards and everything, but it was still kind of like, well, the prophets have said, kind of thing. And it was kind of a half apology, half like, you're not doing what you should be doing, sort of thing. And so it's been awkward from that time on. And I still, sometimes, occasionally over the years, have gotten comments from family members, from my in-laws. Nothing has that offensive though as that time.
Wow, that kind of takes the cake, I think.
I know that's a very emotional story. Like, it's been several years. So, but I tell it to people.
I served a mission, and when I came home from my mission, I gave my little homecoming talk thing. After the meeting ended and I was coming down off the stand, coming down the stairs, my grandfather was standing at the bottom of the stairs with my brother, who was holding his little baby daughter in his arm. And as I stepped down the stairs, he pointed at me and he said, "Now what you need to do is get you one of these." And he pointed at the baby. And I said, "Grandpa, I'm not, I have just barely come back from a mission. I don't even, I'm, I I mean, shouldn't I get married first at least, you know?" And it was weird how much bizarre pressure there was at, I mean, and it was so oddly timed because, I just come back from, enforced celibacy on your mission, where you can't talk to anybody and everyone's at arm's length kind of a thing. There's no interaction with the opposite sex other than to teach them the gospel and get them baptized, basically. And so I don't know, it was so strange. And then even stranger was that one of my aunts had actually brought a suitor to my oh gosh. I don't think I want to talk about that part. That was very awkward. But anyway. But yeah, being asked by I don't know, it's like in the Mormon culture, it almost seems like we are entitled to ask people their
I
baby
definitely
plans.
would agree with that there's this sense of like, we ought to know, it's everybody's business.
Yeah,
Why?
I definitely have that irritation too, because I'm a very private person too, so and very like introverted. So for me, it felt very, very invasive. I don't even want to hear it from my best friends and my mom. Like I sort of feel like that decision is really between my husband and I don't think anyone else should be asking me about it.
So one of my dear friends got married, I don't know, a year or 2 years before I did. 2 years before I did, I think. So then by the time I got married, she had been married for a couple of years and had no children. And the four of us, her husband and she and her husband and then me and my husband were sitting around having dinner one time. And this topic came up of people asking you about your baby plans, and they said, "Boy, we've really been getting the pressure because, we've been married for a couple of years now and there's no kids." And they started telling us some of the things that they were saying to people, because the husband's kind of outrageous a little bit. And so he would say things to people like, "Well, we're having wild sex every night and sometimes multiple times per day. Do you have any suggestions?" And he said that would usually shut the people up because they realized what they were actually asking about was what you were doing with your sex.
Yeah.
And he also said that they were thinking of investing in a concubine. That was
Oh.
another one that they said to people. And I think he said that they were also saying, "Well, we looked at the finances and we think we'd actually like to save up for a boat first." He had just come up with like the most outrageous things to say to people to make them feel as awkward as possible for asking. People did pretty much stop asking them after a little while.
I've heard of that too, friends who also, I have a friend who is also childless by choice and a member, but not in, doesn't live near me, and she says that she will usually like burst into tears or pertend like she's infertile or to make them feel really guilty. I feel bad doing that, so that's not my strategy, but I have heard of people doing that.
It's painful and socially awkward, isn't it? Going to church when you don't have kids. Like, have we all had this experience of being in church without being the right kind of Mormon woman, i.e.
Absolutely.
bathing
Yeah.
ropes?
Yeah, definitely.
I've been put in nursery, and there's this stereotype that I don't know if it's or I don't know if it's a stereotype, but there's this kind of rumor that they put childless people in nursery. I'm not sure if there's any truth to that, and I don't think that's why I'm in nursery. There's other reasons for why I'm in nursery. But while you're in there, people will ask you about, are you gonna have kids? And I usually just say no, and I don't say anything else about it. And so they'll often assign me people to visit teach me. And I really, as being a childless woman in the ward, I really hate having visiting teachers come over, or even a nursery sitting there and listening to people talk about their children or talk about their pregnancy in front of me. And it's especially annoying when they visit teach me and come and sit on my couch and talk to each other about their children. I'm like, hello, didn't you come to visit teach me? I don't mind talking about, your children a little bit, but it gets to be a little bit rude sometimes. I don't know if you've experienced that sort of thing. It's not that I'm, against their children or their family, but it's like, you're taking up my time, and why are you at my house talking about your daughter's swimming class or something like that? I don't know.
Yeah, I have actually been in that position sometimes in family settings, especially where I notice that no one's even making eye contact with me anymore because the conversation is so fully about babies and kids.
I've wondered to myself, and maybe this is unfair to the women in the ward, but I wonder, like, because I feel like I don't have very strong connections with the women in the ward because of my status as a childless woman in the ward, and I often wonder, like, what would happen if I did get pregnant? Would I suddenly have a lot more people wanting to talk to me, inviting me to activities and things that they do that are social, not church activities? Because there's the feeling of not being in the mom club. In my ward specifically, I feel like there's a mom club, the in mothers too. It's not just all mothers. It's just a certain core group, and they get together with their kids, and they run, and they do book clubs and that sort of thing. Not being a part of the mom club, and I wonder, would that change? Like, would my status in the ward change if I had a child? And I would kind of resent it if it did at this point. It would be like, well, you didn't have anything to say to me before, but now you do. And I also notice how they struggle to find things to talk to me about. They ask me about my school, and then that's about it. They don't really know how to, have a conversation sometimes, it seems.
One of the wards that I was in, okay, so keep in mind that my husband and I, when this is happening, we're in our 30s. Every time that a new married couple would move into the ward, that were like the bride was 19 or 20, and then the guy was just fresh off his mission, like he had been home for less than 6 months or something. Anyway, so they're like, more than 10 years younger than we are. And every time that they would move in, our bishop would say, "Hey, there's a new couple in the ward that you should get together and have dinner with them because you have so much in common." And my husband and I were like, "We have so much in common? I don't think we do. We're 8 years into our careers or whatever, and I have a master's degree and he's finishing his master's degree but the reason that we had so much in common was that we didn't have children." And the one time that we did get together with one of these couples, that was what the young couple talked about the whole time, was about their baby plans and how they were going to have baby soon. And we were like, oh, we have so much in common.
Right. So the one thing you have in common is a negative. Not negative in the sense that like not good, but it's like null. You have something in common because it doesn't exist for either of you. That's very strange. That's like two people getting together and going bowling because they don't like bowling.
That's good, yeah. So, how have we seen the purpose of our lives if we're not doing the traditional Mormon purpose of having children? Because that's been the role that's been set forth, is the way that you have purpose in your life as a woman is to marry and have children. So, how do we see our purpose since we have no children?
I think for me, my family, well, my family, my parents in particular were always really supportive, even as a very young girl. While I got messages at church about, when you grow up and you get married and you have babies, that wasn't really the message I got at home. It was all like, when you're in college and, you will go to school. And, I think my mom, even when I was a little girl, assumed that I would go to school and get a degree and have a career. And I don't know why she foresaw that for me, but I had that message growing up. And so for me, I always sort of focused on that like in Young Women's, my favorite value was always knowledge. And I guess I just sort of, for me, it's my purpose in life, or the value in my life, I think, is in sort of growing, just learning new things. And that's sort of been my focus all along, I guess. But I think I'm fortunate that I had that at least coming from home as opposed to what I was getting at church. It kind of helped balance it out so it wasn't so difficult when I left the church.
And then, so if you don't mind me asking, so then when you left, was it easier to find or to feel purpose in your life because you were not in the midst of that culture? Like, was there a difference there?
Yeah, I mean, I felt very free. My first year of college, I was actually at BYU. I felt a lot of guilt about wanting to put my education first, I guess. And once I sort of gave up on that and walked away, it was sort of like giving myself the freedom to just be myself and pursue my own goals and make my own path and not have to, sort of live the prescribed life. So that was very freeing.
How about you, Shelby? How do you see your purpose? How do you see your life having purpose and meaning?
I think about it kind of this way. I remember as a kid, getting the message that, it would either be in literature, a movie, or even my own parents saying this to me, or seeing it that, there's this kind of the scene where you take your child, in your arms and you say, "You can be anything you want to be if you put your mind to it." And they would say it to both men and, both sons and daughters, but I always kind of felt like this was kind of like a lie, like it was lip service. Like the real message was, you can be anything you want to, if you put your mind to it, but you should make the right choice. You can, but you shouldn't. The noble thing to do is to sacrifice yourself for your children so that they can have the chance to be anything that they put their mind to. I remember thinking about that and thinking, like, that doesn't make any sense. Like, the mother is always trying to, then the daughter still gets kind of shorthanded. And so I just got to the point where I started to ask myself, what do I really want? Instead of starting to question the prescribed path and the prescribed place for men and women, and once I started asking myself what I really wanted, what was really right for me, what was really going to be the place where I found some fulfillment, that's when I felt the most happiness, the most brighter future. Instead of feeling sort of trapped and like I did not have choices, like I did not have options, and like, I had to do it their way, not my way. I don't know if that makes sense at all.
Yeah. Actually, with what you're saying, like you can be anything you want to be, but you should make the right choice. And you saying not really having the choices or the options, I think that that might be kind of in a way at the heart of our discussion a little bit is that we wanted to choose. We didn't want to have children as part of a cultural default. Like, I feel like when I was baptized at age 8, it was a cultural default. I was doing what was culturally expected of me because I wanted so much to be a good girl and to please my mommy and daddy and to be a good girl. That's why I got baptized. I didn't get baptized because I understood what that meant, really. I mean, I was 8. I was just a little girl. I didn't want to have children for that same reason,
I can
too.
absolutely relate to that.
If I were going to have children, I wanted it to be a full choice made in complete awareness and desire. It's like there was a line in a movie that said something to the effect of having a kid is like deciding to get a tattoo on your face. You have to be 100% committed.
Exactly. And that's another reason. I know we haven't gotten to the part where we talk about reasons why we haven't chosen to have kids at this point, but that's another reason is that I've witnessed a lot of friends and family members who do have kids without a lot of thought, and I think to myself, that is like one of the biggest decisions you can make in your family, and to just kind of, do it haphazardly with no plan seems insane to me because you're bringing another life into. And so I kind of resent the church's message of like, oh, if you struggle, you'll be blessed, because that seems like, we should be preaching, prepare, prepare, prepare. You should be ready because this is going to affect not only your life, but your child's life. And it should be something that, you have put thought into, not just oopsies, honeymoon baby, ready or not, here it comes.
Yeah, and I think that that has a lot to do with that pressure to have kids early and not to put it off. Like, isn't that the phrase that we hear a lot in the in church talks and so forth? It's not to put off having children. Like that if you were to stop and think about it, that you might decide not to or something, you know? And then watching some of my friends and family members in my extended family and so forth, who, like, I remember watching some people that I know and love who their marriage was struggling, and so the way that they decided to fix it was by having another kid, you know. And it's like, well, that might give you more incentive to stay together. Yes, like statistically, you're more likely to stay together if you have children, but that doesn't fix the marriage. I think that actually probably complicates it quite a bit. And like you were saying with the honeymoon baby, really quick, I remember a friend of mine that they got married and off they went on their honeymoon, and yeah, the first night, the wedding night, you know, her hormones shifted and everything, and she was throwing up and massive morning sickness, and she was very ill through her entire pregnancy. And I thought, wow, they didn't even get a chance to like get to know each other as a married couple before there was a third party involved. The husband went from knowing her before they were married to knowing her morning sick, but not knowing her as herself, his wife, you know, his spouse, his partner. And she went from being all excited to get married and to have more intimacy and everything to don't touch me. Don't even touch me, or I will throw up on you, you know? And it made me sad.
Yeah, and I think in a lot of cases, there's also pressure to get married so quickly that a lot of these people, like a lot of people, don't even know each other very well before they get married, and then they also don't give themselves any time to get to know each other before they have babies, and it's pretty hard.
With the pressure from the general authority talks and things like that to get married young, I've always felt like that was just, when I was a believer, you just had faith, like, oh, trials and tribulations, you come out stronger for it. But, and I could be wrong, but from my observation, people who do make the choice to have children maybe a little bit before they're ready emotionally or financially or whatever, they do not seem to be very, very happy, and they seem to struggle a lot. And I feel like there's a big pressure in the church to kind of convince yourself that misery is happiness. I don't know if you know what I mean by that, but you have to try and tell yourself, I'm so happy, even though, you know, the mother is isolated, seems in every respect to be unhappy and miserable, but is telling you, insisting, I'm so happy. And I've seen that with people where they just seem to be drowning in loneliness and stress and pressure, but they're telling you how happy they are. And it's because they've been told that this will make you happy and they have to believe it. And I have a friend who's also chosen to be childless at this time as she's finishing up nursing school. And we've talked about it. And she talks about how her mother was widowed when she was young. And she says, you know, I've been poor and I did not like it. It was a horrible experience. It was terrible on my mother. My mother didn't have any skills. She didn't have the ability to take care of us. And I never want to put my kids in that place. It was a horrible experience for me, and I'm not going to do that. I'm going to make sure I have my education before I bring a child into this world. And I thought that was a very good story for her to share with me, and I could relate to it.
I have kind of the flip side of that experience, Shelby, where I was sitting with someone who had children. I think she had her first child within the first year and a half of being married, and then had her second child pretty soon after that. And I remember her telling me, "You're thinking about it too much. Don't think about it so much." And it was interesting because I could also feel that there was part of her that was sort of saying, I wish I had thought about it more, you know, and I felt this very awkward tension as she was telling me this, don't think about it so much. You just get married and you mm-hmm. have children. And I thought, but I want to think about it before. Like, I don't want to just jump in. So maybe this is a good spot to ask, you know, have we wanted to have children, to have babies? And what's that been like? Do you want to start off, Amy, with your waffling?
Sure. I've gone back and forth a lot, I think, in the last maybe 6 or 7 years. And I don't really know why, but I have noticed somewhat of a trend. And that is that when I'm not happy in my life and I'm miserable in graduate school, which is frequent, that's when I start thinking like, oh, I just want to have a baby. But I have to ask myself, or I think my husband also asks me, if like that's just my cop-out, the sort of safe thing that I was sort of taught to do anyway, and then the thing that like no one would question, you know, if I quit graduate school and then I said like, but I'm pregnant, then, you know, my family wouldn't maybe question my dropping out of graduate school. So there's that. And then there have been times as well when I genuinely just like yearned for a baby, and I don't know what happened. It's like some sort of hormonal period I went through in my life, and I thought it would never end. That was like when I was maybe about 28, I guess, and it lasted about a year, and then it just went away. I don't know what all of that sort of waffling is about, but it's really hard. And of course, it makes my husband question whether, you know, he wants to have kids, because I don't seem totally sure, and he's not sure, so it's tricky.
So what kept you from having children when you were 28 and desiring to have a baby?
Well, I'm an overthinker, I think. I'm not someone who's going to rush into something just because a whim pops into my head. And I think I didn't, as miserable as graduate school has been from time to time, I don't think I really wanted to give up on it. Now that I'm wrapping up, I'm really glad that I didn't at the time. But yeah, I mean, I guess when I was 28, there was a period of time, about a year, when I actually stopped taking birth control, and in theory we were trying, and I was you know, keeping track of my cycles and my basal body temperature and all those things. But I would use that information to prevent pregnancy instead of trying to get pregnant. And I would, you know, tell my husband like, no, I can't right now. I might be ovulating, or we have to use a condom. And he would be like, are we trying to have a baby or not? And that was sort of a weird year for us. But during that year, he was in his last year of graduate school and applying for jobs. And at first the market looked really good. And there were he got called for a lot of interviews right at first. And so we thought for sure he was going to get a job. And then that was sort of when the whole big financial crisis started. And then suddenly all of those companies had hiring freezes. So he ended up not getting a job and doing a postdoc instead. And so that meant like no money because graduate student stipends and postdoctoral fellowships tend to sort of pay what it costs to survive. And that's kind of it. I think because he didn't have a job in hand, that was another reason that I was really hesitant to actually go forward with it.
How about you, Shelby? Have you?
You know, sometimes, you know, I imagine it a lot and I think about it. And usually when I see my nieces or nephews and I play with them for a little while, I think, oh, they're so cute and they're so fun. And I think about the fun parts, like holidays and, you know, taking them to swim classes or things like that, or school and all the cute little things. But then when I babysit and have them stay over, and I quickly realize, like, oh my gosh, I don't know what I'm doing, and they're driving me nuts, and I don't have patience for this. I just think that it's kind of like, I like to play with them, but I like to send them home to their mom, and I just don't feel ready. I just feel like I will feel ready. But you always hear people say, oh, you're never completely ready. But sometimes, yeah, when I am having fun with a kid, I think about it. But then when I see them, you know, going berserk and crazy, I'm like, oh, I can't handle that right now. Like, I'm, you know, and I have a lot of going on in my life, and I work and I go to school, and I just don't really see how it could work. And the other thing, too, is I ask my husband a lot, because sometimes, I don't know if you've ever felt this way. You kind of talked about that a little bit, Amy, but feeling like maybe you're keeping your husband from having a kid, like maybe they really want one and they're just being supportive, and you're kind of, you know, ruining their family or something, their the way they saw their life going. And I talked to my husband a lot about that. And at this point, I feel like he's really supportive, and he doesn't want children either. Kind of realizes that we're not ready and that we've got too much on our plate, and that we, you know, it's just not the season for kids for us. Can any of you speak to that, about feeling like maybe you're the only reason why you're not having kids, and you're not letting, and your husband is just doing it for you or something like that?
My husband doesn't seem to care one way or the other, which seems really strange to me and bothers me in its own ways. But I definitely don't feel like I'm holding him back, particularly since, like me, he's been sort of really busy with school, and it wouldn't have been the right time for us yet.
I definitely have felt that way, Shelby, with my husband. And it's one of the things that I've thought about at different times, because my husband's just really good with children, and kids love him, and they love to play, and they love to have a lovely time with him. And when we were engaged to be married, I remember that was the first time we kind of talked about kids, and I said that I wasn't real sure if I wanted to have kids, and I definitely didn't want to have them right away. And that really gave him pause, because he had just sort of imagined that his life was going to be the Mormon narrative, you know, that you mm-hmm. marry and you have your children and then you, I don't know, become the bishop, I guess. But anyway, and so to have me saying that, you know, that wasn't the way that I was seeing my life, was kind of a hard point for us. And I remember saying to him, if this is not okay with you, it's okay if you marry someone else, you know, because I didn't want to say, you know.
Yeah, you didn't want to feel guilty about ruining their life or their vision for their life.
Yeah, and if this is something that he wanted to choose, he could choose it if he wasn't choosing me, you know, like that. Mm-hmm. And he did choose me with his full heart, which is wonderful. So we have a very good marriage. And it's interesting, because as the having children question has come up over the years, it's interesting because now he very often says, you know, I think it's really good that we haven't had any children yet because of this and this and this. And he says, and besides, I love being an uncle. Mm-hmm. And he'd never realized how much fun it could be to be an uncle, because all of his uncles, you know, had kids. So, so, you know, they were parents that were uncles instead of uncles who could take time to play with the children.
Yeah, my husband is very good with children as well, but he also, at this point, after we've been, you know, childless for a year, you know, several years, realizes how, like, amazing and fun it is. is that bad to admit that how fun it is to be childless when you're young? I don't know if that's taboo, but it's true.
So, well, no, that's actually a good point.
I feel like it's a little bit taboo to admit that, like, wow, this is great. We have all this time and we don't have to stay get a babysitter and don't have to stay out, come in early and
Yeah, and I think it's one of the things that's most often culturally kind of thrown at people who don't have children is, well, you're being selfish. That's the word that they typically stick to us. And I don't know, is that an accurate term to use? Because I don't feel selfish about not having children. In fact, I feel that it has allowed me to be more open to my nieces and nephews in a way that their parents aren't able to be. And we can talk about that later on, but I do really empathize and resonate with what you're saying, Shelby, about how nice it is to have an adult relationship at home. That's the focus. The focus isn't nurturing child relationships, it's nurturing the marriage that I am in. And we have had a wonderful time creating our marriage, and I think we have an incredible marriage.
Just the ability to sort of drop everything on a Thursday night to go see a movie is really, it's kind of nice because that's not something you do when it's school night and you have to get a babysitter. It is hard. And I know that sort of accusation that that's selfish sometimes feels really hurtful to me. But then on the other hand, I don't care. So I don't know, maybe that's not good to admit, but I don't.
Like, what do you mean you don't care? What do you mean by that?
I guess I don't, well, maybe this is because I'm like an atheist now. And so like, I really believe that my time here is, limited, and then that's it. And I don't feel bad about living my life for me. It's really hard to get to that point, but I guess I feel like we're entitled to a certain amount of selfishness, which isn't to say like it's okay to no neglect the people you love, but to say you're selfish because you're denying what you're there's not even a person there that you're being selfish towards. Like if I had
Right.
kids and I was neglecting them, then that would obviously be very selfish, but they don't exist. So it's hard for me to sort of understand that selfishness accusation.
The idea that to be a good woman, you put everyone else first and not yourself.
Yeah.
And so to put yourself first and say, well, what I want to do with my life, my actual life that I am breathing and living through right now, is that I want to finish this degree in education, or I want to pursue this opportunity, or I want to focus on building this marriage relationship that I have, or I want to like to actually stop and say, what do I want to do? And I think that it is very valid to look at that and say, what I want to do is I want to bear a child. I think that that's entirely valid. But I think also what we're saying is that there's a little bit of a cultural tendency to have children out of cultural response more often than out of, this is how I want to live my minutes that are ticking away here on earth. Like I think that's a really good point, Amy, about
Right.
this is my life. What am I doing with it? And I think that in a sense, I can see why the people would say that is selfish, but I would say it's self-aware.
Right, that's great. I was looking for a word there, fishing for that. And I think my ability to sort of say I don't care also stems from having battled some pretty deep, dark depression at a few points in my life. A lot of that, I think, was because I was such a people pleaser growing up, and leaving the church, for me, it was very much about taking back my own life and being my own person and not living in the church because that's what was expected of me. And so I've had to kind of learn that it's not selfish for me to not live my life for everyone else. And that doesn't mean that I don't care about other people, and it doesn't mean I don't give of myself in certain ways, but there's only so much you can give before, you fall apart. I think that's a problem for me in the church, that it's just so much about giving, giving, giving to everyone. And then if you don't take time to take care of yourself, you will sort of eventually kind of collapse under that pressure.
When I was a child growing up and using all of my not in school hours to help raise the children in my family, I gave and gave and gave and gave, and I definitely felt a hollowness inside of myself. I'm trying to think of how to describe that, except I don't know what the word would be, but I remember that I would get up at night when the house was quiet because I wanted so much to have some self. And I didn't know that that's what I was looking for, but I remember I would get out all the encyclopedias and lay them out and read things I was interested in, and I would go read books until the early hours of the morning. Like, I just wanted to be not taking care of someone else. I wanted to just be myself. Maybe that's a shared feeling that all three of us might have, is that we want to choose if we are going to actually dedicate our lives to bringing other living beings into the world that we are going to then be responsible for, that we want to be able to do that in a way that says, my heart will do this.
Can I speak to the selfishness question?
Oh, you bet.
To me, I don't feel like it's selfishness. I feel like it's being responsible, caring for yourself first, because you cannot care for others if you are not well yourself, if you do not feel, as a woman first, that you are in a good place, that you're healthy mentally, emotionally, physically, spiritually. And so it's not selfishness to take the time and plan out your family, and because children benefit from having a happy, fulfilled mother who is ready for the task, who wants the task, who feels happy and enthusiastic about being a mother. And not that's one of the things that I think about a lot, is that I don't want my child to come, when I future children to come, I don't want it to be like, oh no, this happened before I was ready, in a sense of, dread and being upset about my situation. I want to feel like I am ready. I have done things in my life that I wanted to do, and I feel like, now I can do this task, this new calling, new position, however you want to call it, to the best of my ability, and in a place that is, healthy. And I don't know if that makes sense. So I don't think it's selfishness to take time to prepare and to do the things that you wanted to do in your life, so that you can share that with your children. Because I feel like it can only help your children if you are educated and fulfilled and happy with your life choices, and you're not filled with regret and resentment.
Shelby, with what you're saying about, it can only help your children if you are educated and have fulfilled some of your own dreams and so forth, like if you are
And I'm not saying, I don't want to come across saying that, like, women who didn't plan, or who didn't get educated, aren't as good of mothers. Of course, that's not true. It's just about feeling good about where you are and doing what you want, making the choice fully aware, like you were talking about earlier.
Yeah, and I think that some of this, because when you were saying that just now, I was thinking this is so personal, because it's not that I'm saying no one should have children unless they fulfill all the things that I
And
feel
I'm
like I
not
need
saying
to
that either.
do. Right? Yeah, like that's what I was getting from you. It's like this is such a personal thing. And so I think that sometimes with the church culture, especially like there's the Proclamation on the Family that declares women as nurturers and sets our role as mothers. What if that's not the way that we see ourselves? I mean, if we do see ourselves that way, then there's a very easy path to move forward on. But what if we don't? I'm guessing that the three of us, we don't really see ourselves as mothers. Talking about nurturers would be interesting too. Are we defective?
I definitely felt defective when I was younger. I was not the girl who wanted to hold all the new babies when I was in Young Women's. I feel like I watched a lot of other young women who always wanted to hold the newest baby in the ward and would, rush to hold the baby in sacrament meeting for the mom or something, but I was never that girl, and this message really bothered me because I didn't feel that way at all until I guess my first nephew was born, and then I felt very nurturing towards him, but still not towards any other children.
I feel the
So,
exact same way, Amy.
so I guess I have it in me, but it wasn't something I felt anyway at that age.
Yeah, it's interesting because since I was helping to raise all of my younger brothers and sisters, I was always being told by the women in the ward, oh, you're going to be such a good mother because look at all the skills you already have and you're so good with children. And it's true, I was good with children because, I mean, if you do something a whole lot, you get good at it, right? And so I was good with children, and I was creative and I was able to assess what they needed. And but yeah, I didn't want anybody else's kids. And I remember being sought out as a babysitter as a teenager, and I truthfully, I hated it. I didn't want to go take care of more children. That was not what I wanted to do. And so I finally just started telling people that I couldn't, and they finally quit asking, because I just, every time I went, I was just like, why am I doing this? Why am I spending more time taking care of more people's children? And when my aunts would come over for family gatherings with their babies in their arms and their toddlers around their ankles and their children in their waist, they would hand them to me. And so I not only had my mother's children, I had my aunt's children. And so, here I was, this child mother taking care of all these children, and I was nurturing and I was creative, but it wasn't a choice at all. And it wasn't, I don't think, a developmentally appropriate time. I don't know. I don't think children are meant to be mothers.
Yeah, I think that message that, you're nurturing, you're innately nurturing, that people get that in young women's seems really out of place to me. I don't know if maybe a lot of other teenagers do feel terribly nurturing, but and I'm not like a specialist in development, but I don't know. I don't know if one is supposed to feel particularly nurturing towards others in their early teens.
Yeah, and I do like both of you saying, when your first niece or nephew came along, kind of a thing, then there was an awakening kind of thing. I remember specifically how that didn't happen for me. And I remember one of my sisters-in-law holding her new baby, and the baby was fussing, and I knew how to soothe that baby because I had soothed so many babies, and it was her first baby, and she was a younger child in the family, so she hadn't grown up raising children like I had. And so she was feeling, awkward and frustrated with her brand new baby. And so I said, here, I'll hold her for a second. And I rocked the baby for a moment, and the baby just quieted right down and fell asleep. And she was like, how did you do that? And I just said, it's practice. And here I was, the one with no children, and she now has, several children, and I still have none. But it was like, well, so does that mean because I know how to rock a baby, I know the rhythm that they like and the pitch they like to hear, what to hear hummed to them, does that mean that I should therefore, well, but what if it's not, I feel like I can't even say this. It's like, well, you're good at it, so you should do it. And it's like, well, what if you don't want to do it? But I feel like I can't culturally say that makes me into a bad person. That you can't not choose it. Do you ever have these feelings of, you simply ought, like you can't even voice it?
Yeah, absolutely. Particularly, I feel like sometimes when I'm expressing my own sort of feelings about this, that there's no way for me to say things in a way that isn't going to be taken personally, maybe by other people. But also in this sort of sense that, like, you're not supposed to feel that way, you're not allowed to feel that way, or somehow there's something wrong with you. And then I think because we don't discuss those things a lot with other women, it's like a code of silence almost, but.
Yeah, because there's such a strong cultural push for us to fulfill a certain role that if we say, I don't like that role, it's like we're saying to all of the other women, I don't like you.
Yeah, absolutely.
And that's not the case. I do love my sisters and friends and cousins and my mom and my grandmas, and like I love all these women, and I love their motherhood. That's great. But can I say that I don't want to be a mother without saying I don't want you?
Right. And I think for me, I'm not necessarily saying I don't want children, because I don't know, like, in the long run if I will, but just saying, like I feel like I can't honestly say I don't know that I would be fulfilled if I was just a mother. And it's like that just that is problematic, I think, because I don't want to feel like, I don't want other people to feel like I'm putting them down, because that's sort of what they're doing full time, or to imply that they shouldn't be fully satisfied and fulfilled in their life doing that. But yeah, I don't think I would, and I don't know how to express that without maybe offending.
Exactly. Thanks for listening to Daughters of Mormonism. To hear part two of this panel discussion, please go to daughtersofmormonism.blogspot.com. Special thanks to Sarah for editing this episode, and thanks to Kevin MacLeod for the music.